Your personality is pretty even. It's highly mediated by your degree of mindfulness. And so it's possible sometimes to think, well, the Banti I met in 1970 is not very different to the Banti I know now. But actually, I rather suspect you have changed a lot. But would you say you have changed a lot in these years? Well,
how much is a lot? When it's very difficult to say. Yes, I mean, how long is a piece of string? But I'm sure I have changed, but it hasn't been a dramatic change. I think the story of my life, and maybe especially my spiritual life, has been one of steady, I hope, growth, but certainly not dramatic ups and downs.
But you've been content throughout this period that you at least have felt engaged with
I have felt that I've been doing something worthwhile, which is, I hope, beneficial for others and certainly beneficial to me. This may sound strange to say this, but I've been very much inspired by my own lectures, because, not always, but I think certainly when I gave most of them, I was in a very inspired mood. Very inspired indeed. And it was sometimes quite difficult to come down to earth afterwards, as some people might have noticed.
I mean, something that one could say is that by coming to the West, you attenuated at least your links with any teachers or Kalyana Mitras that you might have had in India. Has that felt like a big feature of your life, or have you felt you've kept in touch with them through?
I certainly feel I've kept in touch with them, mainly or partly at least, not just through my memories, but through the sadhanas that I've done, and which I still do sometimes, because I always associate certain sadhanas with the teachers, in the case of the Tibetan teachers, who gave them to me. So they're very definitely that connection.
Mm.
And of course I'm still in contact with Chechol Sangye Dorje, who is still alive happily. And he sends me little messages from time to time through someone who happens to have gone to see him.
In the Thousand Petal Lotus, you refer to Sangharakshita 1 and Sangharakshita 2. Over the years, do you think one of them has been in charge, or have they taken it in turns, or do you think you have affected the marriage?
I think there was a time, the early days of the movement, when the poetic Sangharakshita, for want of a better term, was definitely more prominent and more active. And I also happened to write quite a bit more poetry at that time, and of a kind that I hadn't written before. I think Sangharakshita, the philosopher, the translator, has always been more prominent. But I also look at it like this. The two Sangharakshitas are rather like that yin-yang emblem where you get the two, so to speak, tadpoles. Do you know what I mean? A black one and a white one. But in the middle of the black one, there's a white dot. And in the middle of the white one, there's a black dot. Yeah? So it's a bit like that. There's a bit of Sangharakshita 1 in Sangharakshita 2 and a bit of Sangharakshita 2 in Sangharakshita 1. They interact. There's a sort of tension, dialectical relationship between the two. And I think the movement is a product of that. Because the movement is many-sided. And yet, say, we emphasize study. We emphasize understanding the Dharma. But we also emphasize the spiritual importance of the arts. So I would say that in some ways the movement is the outcome of that creative interaction between these two sides of my character, which are not two different personalities, but two different ways in which the same person functions.
With something that emerges clearly in your poetry is a tremendous capacity for passion and for intensity, which again, sometimes your outward, your mindful, reasonable outward appearance belies. I wonder whether That has been a theme in your life, the search for that level of passionate intensity of engagement with a project or with a person.
Hmm. I can't say there was a conscious search, certainly not. But obviously some things have stimulated me, some persons have stimulated me more than others, and there was a correspondingly intense and more creative response.
I think of your friendship with Terry de la Mer, which you chronicle, you know, in some detail in your latest volume of memoirs. I wonder to what extent you were surprised, whether you were taken by surprise by what seems to be the intensity of that friendship.
I wouldn't say intensity. Terry was a very good human being. He was, despite the depression, he was a very mature person. He was very balanced. He was very objective. And I felt I could discuss anything with him very freely, especially any deeper philosophical issue. I think it was that which was important to me, rather than any emotional intensity.
Because there are people who've read that volume of memoirs and have said, well, you know, you were obviously in love with him.
Yes. Well, I have said, and people have agreed with me, that in all the close male friendships, and I'm not speaking of gay friendships, in all close male friendships, there is an element of falling in love at the beginning.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, you told me when we talked in 1988, an interview for Golden Drum, that your friendship with Terry was not a sexual friendship at all.
Right.
And yet, you know, people around you assumed, and I think still assume, you know, as some legends would have it, that it was a homosexual relationship. But one thing, you never explicitly denied it.
I didn't feel I needed to. I mean, one can't go around denying things that aren't true, even if you suspect that people are thinking them. and also, of course, you might think that, well, even if I was to deny it, well, they wouldn't believe me anyway, so what's the point? They've made up their minds, that's the way it is, so what's the difference? I mean, I didn't experience that sort of suspicion painfully, because, well, what would be wrong even if it was a homosexual relationship anyway? Yeah.